In some cases, you can take a bad idea, and if you have the right connections, the right resources, the right experience, if you have enough money, if you've got great advertising, you can turn a bad idea into a winner. This is not one of those situations. Hey, it's Rick Kettner here. Let's talk about Quibi. If you haven't heard, Quibi is a brand new video streaming service that debuted earlier this year. Prior to launch, they raised $1.75 billion. The basic idea is a mobile-first approach to streaming video. So they've created completely original content where each episode is designed to be no more than 10 minutes in length. So it's perfect for people that want to consume high-quality content on the go. It was founded by Jeffrey Katzenberg, former chairman of Walt Disney Studios, co-founder and former CEO of DreamWorks. Meg Whitman is CEO, former CEO of eBay, former executive at both the Walt Disney Company and DreamWorks. Two huge names with two big resumes, and they're aiming to reinvent streaming video. Now, of course, what we're most focused on here is the business perspective. Is Quibi likely to succeed? Is it likely to fail? Most important of all, what are the practical lessons and insights that we can take away by studying their early strategy? So let's kick things off by looking at the value proposition. The service is described as movie quality shows designed for your phone. That's the basic premise that they're trying to provide. The problem that they're looking to solve is the fact that everybody has small pockets of time throughout the day where we could be bored, we could be looking for some form of entertainment, maybe we're waiting in line at Starbucks, maybe we're riding transit, maybe we're taking lunch at work, and during these times, we don't have enough to do, apparently. And so the solution that Quibi provides is kind of threefold. Number one, they create original movie quality shows. Number two, these shows are designed to be no more than 10 minutes in length. And finally, they optimized this content for mobile viewing. So they've got a pretty interesting feature they call the turnstile, which basically means you can watch this content either in portrait or landscape orientation. So you can hold your phone vertically and it'll provide a close-up to the primary action in the scene, or if you switch over to more of a landscape view, then you'll see the traditional widescreen where you can see a little bit more of what's going on and get more of the standard TV viewing experience. Now, to be absolutely blunt in terms of my impression here, this feels very much like they found a solution and then went hunting for a problem, like they had a bunch of experience when it came to storytelling, creating great content, great relationships with artists and actors, and they put all this together and said, okay, we can create really great content. How can we take these skills and these strengths and apply it to something like mobile? How can we find a problem for this solution, for these skills that we already have? That's my personal opinion. I could be wrong. We're going to come back to this later in the episode and talk about this from a perspective of just assuming they've got this right. But I want to first kick things off by looking at some very real issues that I think could prevent them from being successful. So with that in mind, let's jump into issue number one, misunderstanding the power of mobile. The mistakes that a lot of businesses make when it comes to adapting to new paradigms is they tend to focus on the facade. This is actually something I talked about in episode number two. And the context there was Amazon entering a new business model based on the internet. So many other businesses tried to innovate within the realm of the internet, but they overly focused on the facade in many cases, and as a result, they failed. Meanwhile, Amazon focused much more on the underlying strengths of what the internet made possible, and they were more successful. And I think Quibi is falling into this same trap as far as the businesses that failed, and that is they're looking at mobile and they're really focusing on the facade, on the surface, on what mobile seems to be all about without really diving into the details. And I think ultimately the mistake they've made is they see the smartphone as a handheld TV. They're looking at the smartphone as simply a smaller screen that people use in a more limited basis. So they're really optimizing around screen size and the ability to view content both in portrait and landscape, and they're optimizing based on the fact that people don't sit in front of their smartphones for as long as they might a TV, and so they're optimizing for this 10-minute format. But they really aren't looking at the full power of what makes mobile so interesting and what mobile really makes possible. And this is what you always want to do when you're looking at a new paradigm. You want to seek to truly understand what is possible in that paradigm. So in the case of mobile phones, these devices have cameras, they have all kinds of apps, including social networks. all kinds of software and hardware capabilities that allow them to do so much more than a television can do. And this unlocks very practical things like social sharing, audience participation, and perhaps most important of all, user-generated content. And this is why so many of the social networks, including Instagram with IGTV, TikTok, Facebook, even YouTube, they largely focus around empowering users to do things like share social clips, to add comments and add reactions, and even to create original content. So ultimately, the real power of mobile isn't in the form factor or in having a TV in your pocket. It's about empowering users and making things interactive. This brings us to the next issue. Issue number two, misunderstanding the real challenge. Jeffrey Katzenberg described their primary challenge as trying to compete with free. He made the case that at the end of the day, what's going to make or break Quibi is can they present a value proposition that people are willing to pay for? In other words, they're competing against free. They have to convince people that it's worth spending several bucks a month for a premium service. This is very, very reminiscent of an argument that Steve Jobs made when it came to launching the iTunes Store back in the day. When Steve Jobs first launched the iTunes Store, kind of the argument behind it was that people don't want to pirate music. They don't actually want to steal or copy or share songs, which was heavily prevalent at the time. If you could provide them with a convenient way to purchase music, a better experience, better audio quality, then ultimately people are willing to pay money for that experience. And Steve Jobs was 100% right within that context. People were willing to pay for music, and ultimately the iTunes Store was a huge success, and then eventually it paved the way for subscription services like Spotify to also have success. But I think that argument is largely irrelevant when it comes to Quibi. I don't think this is about free versus premium. At the end of the day, I think what this is really about is fighting over the future of short-form content and what that's going to look like. And this very much feels like Quibi is in the old paradigm, and they're trying to compete in the new paradigm, but they don't understand it. They don't understand the future of mobile content. They're trying to leverage their strengths from the past, from the old paradigm, from television, and they're trying to apply them to a new paradigm, and I don't think they're going to be very effective in doing so. So really, the future of short-form content is making content more flexible, more diverse, more relevant, more shareable, and more open to participation. This is really the magic of mobile devices, and this is why platforms like Instagram TV, TikTok, YouTube, and even Facebook are more focused on the person holding the smartphone than what the smartphone itself can do. They're much more focused on the user and how they can create a better experience for the user, not so much how they can take what they're already good at doing and make it fit this mobile format, which is, I think, the mistake that Quibi is making. So ultimately, when you look at the true strengths of mobile when it comes to flexibility and content, all different kinds of lengths and formats, relevance, having great algorithms that help people find content that they will absolutely love, and custom tailoring this on a user-by-user basis, having far greater diversity in content because these platforms are focused on user-generated content. And then finally, the shareability factor, and of course, being open to participation, where anybody can publish, anybody can participate, and ultimately, it's up to the algorithms to deliver the best results of all that to users. Now, that might be an ongoing work in progress, but that's very much where things are moving in the future, is the ability for any one person to find the best content that suits their needs in the right length, the right format, and in terms of the right topics and interests that they might have. So that is kind of the real challenge that I think Quibi is facing. Now, regarding free, going back to the idea of free versus pay, this of course is a factor, but I don't think it's a factor in the way that they're approaching it. I think the real factor of free is that when a platform is free, it lowers the barrier to entry and makes the experience more universally accessible. So if I find a really great video on IGTV or a really great video on YouTube, I can share it with everybody and I don't have to worry about which of my friends may or may not have a Quibi subscription. I don't have to worry about that. And I know that they can participate, they can comment, they can engage. So this universality, knowing that everybody has access, even if they don't have a registered account, they can view the content, is really powerful. This low friction makes it open to everybody and unlocks an entirely new level of experience that you just simply cannot get with a pay service. So free versus pay, part of the equation for sure, but I don't think it's in the way that Quibi and their team really see it. It's not about, is it worth people paying? It's what is possible as far as accessibility and openness when something is truly free. But with all of this in mind, I just want to take a big pause here for a second, and let's pretend none of this is true. Let's pretend that Quibi absolutely nailed it. They're right. And I don't mean this facetiously. Let's actually assume they figured it out, they have the right solution, and that what people really want at the end of the day is high-quality, movie-like content delivered to portable devices in shorter form. They could be right. They absolutely could be right. These things are always impossible to truly predict ahead of time. And so with that in mind, let's assume that's correct. Let's move into issue number three in terms of how they're actually rolling this out. So issue number three is trying to appeal to everybody. This is a very common mistake, and this is something that I actually addressed back in episode number one as well. Quibi is falling into the trap of trying to appeal to everybody at the same time. And the problem is, even if your product or service has the potential for broad market appeal, it's generally a mistake to try to appeal to everybody at the same time, even if your idea has very real potential. So in the case of Quibi, the practical issue here is that it's very, very expensive to try to roll out extremely high quality short form content for a massive general audience. You have to spend a small fortune creating high production value content across all the different topics that might interest people. And the obvious issue here is not only is it expensive, but based on early reviews and everything that I'm hearing and what I experienced myself in joining the early extended trial, is this is all coming at the cost of quality. So they are rolling out a decent number of shows all at the same time, but none of the shows are particularly great. And because they're trying to appeal to so many people at the same time, for any one person that might be joining the service, there might be a handful of shows that are of interest to them and even fewer that are decent enough in terms of quality to win them over versus services like Netflix or Amazon Prime Video or the many other different content options that they have available to them. So when it comes to what they could have done differently, a much better approach would be to start by identifying one core audience that is going to benefit most from whatever it is that they're building. So in the case of Quibi, when it comes to mobile first, high quality, short form video, they should identify one core audience that they think is going to absolutely love that kind of content, and then build out three, maybe four, maybe five really great shows for that one audience. So spend as much of their money and energy up front to truly satisfy one audience of people. That way, that audience will join the service, love it, see it as being a really great alternative to other video streaming services out there, and be far more likely to recommend it to other people like them so that Quibi can actually establish some momentum, because it's so much easier to start with a narrow focus and slowly add more content and expand outward than it is to try to appeal to everybody. Almost inevitably, you're going to fall short from really satisfying all of them. You're very likely, and this is what I think is happening, going to create a negative first impression, and it's very difficult to recover from that. For some reason, so many businesses, and again, I've made this mistake, many businesses make this mistake, there's this natural drive to think you need to go big in order to be successful. It's almost the safer approach in a weird, twisted way in terms of the embarrassment factor. To go big, to try to do the big thing, if it doesn't work, at least you really went for it. Whereas if you start small, if you're actually methodical in terms of how you satisfy a core audience and slowly expand outward, well, if that fails for some reason, perhaps the product or service wasn't really that great, it looks like you aimed too low. And so for some reason involving that, there's this desire that we have to go big, to try to make it big right off the start. Far better to satisfy one audience, to confirm your idea, to make sure it's a winner, to prove it out, and to slowly expand outward through word of mouth referral and through satisfying that one audience with focused effort up front, than it is to have this blanket approach to trying to please everybody at the same time. So it's prediction time. In my opinion, Quibi is a bad idea. I don't think it's going to work. I think there are some very real issues here. They might be able to solve them, but I think it's a bad idea. In some cases, you can take a bad idea, and if you have the right connections, the right resources, the right experience, if you have enough money, if you've got great advertising, you can turn a bad idea into a winner. This is not one of those situations. I think Quibi is very likely going to fail. The one asset that they do have is their catalog of original content. And again, based on early reviews, I don't think it's the best content. I don't think it's likely to succeed. But I think what will happen is Quibi will ultimately fail. And on the way down, they'll sell their library of content to a service like Netflix or possibly Amazon Prime Video. And that ultimately, this form of short-form, high-quality content will end up being a niche category on one of those platforms as opposed to a dedicated ecosystem like Quibi. That's it for this episode. If you have any questions, thoughts, or comments about anything that we covered here, please let me know down in the comment section below. I'll very likely be following this episode up with a Q&A session where we can dive into more detail based on the thoughts and perspectives that come in. If you're listening to the audio edition, I'll include a link to the video edition down in the show notes. You can go there to leave your comment for possible inclusion in that Q&A session. But that's it for this episode. If you're interested in more content like this, I recommend that you subscribe or follow my updates so that you don't miss out on future episodes. But thank you for tuning in. I look forward to connecting with you again in a future episode.